When Phoebe Snetsinger was given a year to live, she dedicated herself to bird watching. Up next, Olivia Gentile explores the single-mindedness of Phoebe's dedication. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC is supported by ABT. The box office is now open for American Ballet Theatre's spring season at the Metropolitan Opera House, including Giselle, Swan Lake, and celebrations of Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev. Tickets at 212-362-6000, abt.org, or the Met box office. Colonial Williamsburg and its theatrical program, Revolutionary City, a family-friendly experience that brings the American Revolution to life. Tickets are available at history.org or 1-800-HISTORY.
New York City's own station, WNYC.
WNYC, 93.9 FM, AM 820, and WNYC.org.
The Joyce Theater supports WNYC and presents the Joe Good Performance Group in collaboration with puppeteer Basil Twist, April 23rd through the 26th. More information, joyce.org. WNYC is giving away a pair of tickets for opening night, Thursday, April 23rd at 8, to the third caller to reach us at 212-433-9692. But please note, if you've won anything from WNYC in the past 30 days, you're not eligible for these tickets. In 1965, a desperately unhappy 34-year-old housewife and mother named Phoebe Snetsinger took up bird watching to help relieve her depression. It quickly became a single-minded obsession, and by the time she died in 1999, Phoebe had traveled the world and seen some 6,000 birds. Olivia Gentile has chronicled Phoebe's life and her passion in a book called Life List, A Woman's Quest for the World's Most Amazing Birds. It's published by Bloomsbury. I'm very pleased it has brought Olivia Gentile to the show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
So how did you find out about Phoebe Snetsinger?
Well, it was really by chance. I had lived in Vermont for 3 years and dated a bird watcher, and I was very in love with him. I just thought his passion was a beautiful thing, and the subculture he introduced me to, the subculture of birders, was fascinating as well.
This is a man you call Tate in the book.
I do call him Tate. And he was.
And you say that bird watching provided him with a kind of salvation. What do you mean by that?
It did, because as it turned out, he was clinically depressed. He's a wonderful man who suffered at the time from chronic depression. But bird watching was the one thing that could consistently get him out of bed and make him happy. I didn't feel that I could do that for him, and I didn't feel that therapy could do that for him.
Now you're married to somebody who makes people laugh.
I am.
So is that in response? You were looking for something a little different. Andy Berowitz is your husband?
Well.
We have to ask the question, because Andy was on the show on April 1st, and we did, I thought, he did a marvelous April Fool's joke.
He did.
There are going to be people who are going to say, you're married to Andy Berowitz. Can we believe anything in this book?
Well, Andy and I both are very silly, but in my work, I'm rather serious, although there are some moments of levity in the book. There are some very funny aspects of birdwatching that I try to bring to light.
Tate kept a life list. What's a life list? That's also the title of your book here.
Yes. A life list is a list of all the birds you've seen and identified in the field during your career as a bird watcher. So any bird that you see, like at the zoo, doesn't count. A bird that you see but you don't know what species it is doesn't count. And you're really not supposed to put birds on your life list unless you've seen and identified them by yourself. If someone else has told you what the species is, it's not supposed to count. And actually, I should say, Phoebe actually saw 8,400 bird species rather than 6,000, which was more than anyone in history.
And she had set 5,000 as her goal.
She had. When she was diagnosed with cancer in 1981, she was told she had less than a year to live. And she decided to see as many birds as she could during that year. She ended up not even getting sick during that year. And so she kept birding. And eventually she said, I want to see 5,000 species. But once she saw 5,000 species, she decided to keep going. and eventually made it after 18 years to 8,400.
Now, she was married.
She was.
In fact, she'd gotten married straight out of college.
Mm-hmm. Like many women of her era.
She seemed reluctant to get married, but she did that because that's what you did.
Mm-hmm. She had wanted to be a scientist, but it really wasn't possible then for a woman to pursue that goal unless she was willing to sacrifice marriage and family.
Was it a good marriage?
That's a good question. It was like many marriages of the era, I think, in that they loved each other, they cared about each other. I don't think they really talked about intimate things. And I think ultimately that led to their growing apart.
And he was thinking of divorcing her by the time she died. But I would have thought she was away so much it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Yes. I mean, she was away by the end 9 months out of every year. And
how old were their kids at that point?
The kids were adults by then. When Phoebe was diagnosed with cancer in 1981, the kids were already in late high school or college. And that is how Phoebe was able to take off at that point.
How did she become interested in bird watching in the first place?
Well, in her case, it was also by chance. She lived in Minnesota at the time with her young family, and she was left alone with the kids for a winter because her husband, Dave, was on sabbatical in Tennessee. By the way, her husband was a poultry scientist. So there was a strong current of birds running through the family. And
obviously his job kept him away from hers.
At that time.
Not all that different from her going off and doing what she did.
Yeah, but in general he was at home. Just that particular winter, which turned out to be one of the coldest on record in Minnesota, he wasn't there. And she had a very hard time with the four little kids, three of whom were in diapers, if you can believe it. And by the springtime, when the snow had thawed and Dave was back, she said, I really need to find something besides being a housewife to occupy myself. And she happened to have a friend, a neighbor who was into birds and invited her over to see the spring warbler migration. And basically, it was almost like a religious conversion. She was hooked for life in a moment.
Although this is not as common among women as it is among men. Aren't most birders men?
Well, it's interesting. I would say that perhaps it's about equal. However, most very intense birders are men, and also most young birders are men. Women tend to get into birding in their 30s or 40s, whereas a lot of boys get into birding as teens.
And they call it birding. The rest of us call it bird watching.
You know what? They'll call it either. And in England, the one word that's used is twitching. People say that birding connotes the sport of it, trying to see as many species as possible, regardless of how difficult it is to find them or get to them. Whereas bird watching connotes a more thoughtful process.
Now, when we talk about her kind of bird watching, we're not talking about just going to the local park and spotting how many birds you can see. Her birding required a real investment in time and money.
Absolutely. And she was the daughter of advertising magnate Leo Burnett, which is how she had an inheritance. He was a very obsessive, creative, brilliant advertising titan in Chicago. So she had money, which she hadn't spent much of until she got sick. I mean, she and Dave lived very simply. They didn't live extravagant lives by any stretch. But yes, Phoebe, especially as her birding career progressed and as her years on the road built up, she started taking more and more far-flung, adventurous trips until she was taking some trips that put her in harm's way.
That was in New Guinea, for example, where
for example,
she was attacked.
In New Guinea, she was abducted and gang-raped. And that was shortly after she saw 5,000 species. That was in 1986. And I think that it might have been a reaction to the rape that made her become even more focused after that and decide to go for 8,000 species.
Others might very well have said, this has gotten out of hand for me. I can't put myself into this kind of situation.
I know. That's one of the reasons I find her so interesting. It's paradoxical. Instead of doing that, she redoubled her efforts to see birds, and she became even more adventurous and at times reckless.
Now, why do you think that is? Because she knew she was going to die? Was she fighting depression the way Tate was, do you think?
I think she was fighting depression in the 60s and 70s. I think once she started traveling after she got cancer, I think she was exuberant and almost manically happy. And that was a wonderful time for her. But then after she got raped, her birding took on a more compulsive tinge.
Did she talk to people about the rape? Because that often is something that people internalize.
Right. She would talk about it factually, but not emotionally. She would tell people that it had happened, but she would tell people she was over it, and she did not want to do therapy. She did not do therapy. And she was very intent on defending the guide she'd been with at the time against any accusations that he had been responsible for it.
Or been complicit in some way. Did she travel with other birding companions?
Mm-hmm. She, especially after she was raped, she always said, you know, I don't want to travel alone. And birders are social by nature, and they like to see birds together. It's part of the experience. So she liked to take tours with bird tour companies, and as she became more experienced and she'd already taken all the commercial tours, she'd start to organize her own tours with her friends, and they would pool their money and hire a local guide.
Well, part of the whole thing when you're birding with somebody else is if you have to identify the bird on your own, that means you can't tell the other person, or they can't tell you.
It's not that strict. I went on a couple bird tours, and basically
they don't say, oh, there is a
no,
single
the guide
sapper,
or someone else.
Prince, whatever. Sapster.
The guide or someone else in the group will say, oh, I think there's a such and such. But it's a big no-no if you just sort of tick it off on your list without looking through your binoculars and seeing the field marks for yourself and knowing what those field marks are.
You even include illustrations in this book.
The illustrations were done by Rebecca Layton, an artist in Austin. She's extremely talented, but she had not done a lot of bird illustration before, and she just did these wonderful impressionistic but still broadly anatomically correct pictures.
Did she discover any birds that nobody else had seen before, or at least nobody else had recorded before? Because when you're up to 8,000, whatever it is, that's an awful lot of birds.
And by the end, she was only seeing a few dozen new birds a year because there were no easy birds left to see. And so she'd have to, say, go to the Philippines and trek in the mountains for 3 weeks looking for just three or four species. She saw a lot of birds that only a handful of people have seen. She didn't personally discover any new species.
My guest is Olivia Gentile, whose book, Life List, A Woman's Quest for the World's Most Amazing Birds, is published by Bloomsbury. So she had cancer. Did it go into remission?
Well, here's the thing.
And what kind of cancer was it?
It was melanoma. I think
the worst kind.
It's a terrible kind of cancer to get if it's already spread by the time they catch it, which was the situation for Phoebe. But in some cases, it advances to the lymph nodes and doesn't spread beyond the lymph nodes.
So they cut out the lymph nodes.
Well, in her case, they cut out the lymph nodes, but they still expected it to spread. And this was 1981. I'm sure the protocols were different then. But they said basically there's no treatment, and chances are, or it's very likely, that you'll be dead within the year. And they offered her some experimental treatments, but she wasn't interested. She felt like she had deferred her happiness for a long time because she'd never been thrilled about being a housewife as much as she loved her children and her husband. She had always wanted to be a scientist.
So did she do something to treat the cancer, or did she deal with it the same way she had dealt with her rape?
At the time, the chemists Linus Pauling was recommending 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day for melanoma and maybe for other cancers too. And believe it or not, Phoebe started taking 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day and I believe continued until her death. But that was all she did. And the melanoma did come back a couple times in her lymph nodes, but in every case they were able to remove it and she never got sick.
Scientists will tell you that cancers love vitamin C, mm-hmm. that it may be okay for prevention, but once you have cancer, the C goes right to the cancer and feeds the cancer. So she just had a slow growing melanoma situation.
Right, and maybe the doctors shouldn't have been so categorical when they told her she was going to die, but that was what she heard from them, and she lived accordingly.
And she died on one of her trips?
Yes, she died in Madagascar. Her body had been breaking down for a while by that point. She was 68 and still taking very rugged trips. She had actually recently broken her wrist in the Philippines and stayed on the trip after breaking her wrist without getting treatment because she didn't want to miss the birds, and she was very stoic about her pain.
Do you think that Phoebe can be seen as a feminist role model, or was her interest in birds a little unhealthy because it seemed so obsessive?
Well, what I love about Phoebe is that it's both. I think that Phoebe is an example of someone who achieved self-realization late in life, but who then went overboard and lost perspective. So I think it's both.
And there are some questions that you pose in the introduction to your book. One of them is, what does it mean to live and die well?
Yes.
So it was that. Why was that a question that you asked when you wrote this book about Phoebe's life? Do you think that she lived her life and died well?
I think she lived well at times. And I think at times her obsession with getting to 8,000 birds and then eventually 8,400 became pathological. And eventually the joy that she had experienced in the field, the joy that had made her life better since 1965, became eclipsed by this need to be the best, much like her father, Leo Burnett.
Is she in the Guinness Book of World Records?
She is. Actually, two male British birders have passed her by now and have seen maybe 8,500, 8,600 species. So she may not still be, but she was in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Well, if it's males, then she has to be in as the woman who has seen the most birds.
Exactly.
By the way, we have a link to your website. Olivia Gentile has a website. We have a link on our show page. It has illustrations from the book?
Yes, and some animation. It's a very cool website.
What happened to her kids? Did they ever get into birding?
Yes, three of the four of them got into birds. And Phoebe's son, Tom, is an ornithologist in Oregon. And he studies northern spotted owls. And he and Phoebe were very close and used to birdwatch a lot together. They're both kind of shy people who connected through birds, which I think a lot of birders are shy and find a wonderful medium of connection with other people.
Do you think
through
that
birds.
Did the kids ever resent the fact that mom was away so much, and then again that she died while she was away?
Yes, the kids. Tom was the most understanding because he shared her passion for birds. The three daughters, two of whom are into birds, had a more conflicted relationship with their mother's second act in life. They felt that she essentially neglected their father, and that she wasn't there for them either. But they loved her and they were proud of her and they admired her.
Do all birders believe in keeping a life list?
Not every single birder, no, but it's very common. I would say most birders keep a life list. Certainly not to compete with other birders necessarily, although that is a component of the culture that a lot of birders are involved with.
Olivia Gentile will be reading and signing books on Tuesday, April 21st at 7:15 at KGB Bar. For more information, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. And as I said, we also have a link to her internet site. The book, Life List, is published by Bloomsbury. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.